In the film The Emerald Story, a Caucasian youth named Tommy, or now Tome, has been captured and reared by natives of the Brazilian rainforest. Playing in the river one day with a beautiful young girl and beginning to notice her in, shall we say, a new yet very primal way, he suddenly hears a booming male voice. Tome, your time has come to die. And I thought it was bad when my mom used my full name as a kid. It's the voice of the chief who has appeared on the riverbank with his wife and some of the tribal elders. Everyone appears profoundly shaken. The chief's wife asks, "Must he die?" And the chief replies menacingly, "Yes." Then we see a nighttime scene in which Tome is seemingly tortured by the older men of the tribe around a fire. He's then sent off into the jungle vines and is further tortured as his flesh is invaded by a mass of jungle ants. He writhes in agony, and we fear the worst. Finally, the sun comes up, and Tome, badly bitten and half conscious, is lifted up by the older men and taken to the river, where they lovingly bathe him, soothing his countless ant bites. Then the chief proclaims with solemn joy, "The boy is dead, and the man is born." The tribe's shaman then blows a drug through a long pipe into Tommy's nostrils, and Tommy has his first ritual spiritual experience. In his hallucination, he discovers his animal soul, an eagle, and soars over the world and the jungle with an expanded consciousness and a deepening conscience. Only after this is he allowed to marry the beautiful girl, because now, through the trials and transcendence of a powerful ritual initiation rite, he has become a man, both in flesh and in spirit. Now, this type of process may seem antiquated to us, but we need to realize that our modern minds are products both of the Protestant Reformation and of the Enlightenment, which both discredited ritual processes because they didn't understand their spiritual power. So instead, when kids come of age, we mostly throw parties with a few religious trappings, after which friends and relatives stick cards stuffed with cash into a basket. The transition to adulthood has been reduced to what anthropologist Victor Turner termed mere ceremonial. There's no real transformative power present. No deep move from what the authors Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette call from boy psychology to man psychology. And because of this, as mentioned in our reading, lots of overgrown boys are running around masquerading as mature men. So much so that Moore and Gillette say that we're in a crisis of mature masculinity. But we modern men still have ancient psyches inside us that cry out for initiation. And if we don't get it from our elders, we try to do it ourselves through pseudo-initiations. This attempt is seen in fraternity hazings, in ritual gang initiations, even in some of the recruitment rituals of terrorist groups, and more. Young men need power and guidance, the guidance of truly wise elders who can see more than they can, and who know that the rituals need to open the initiate to their place in the wider community. But without a spiritual basis, these either mean little or go awry. Now that said, traditional initiations are a double-edged sword. They provide a strong sense of identity and a deep connection to the tribe. But the roles they allow for, while clear, are often limiting and rigid. But so-called advanced or modern societies such as ours have the opposite problem. We have lots of freedom of choice, but sometimes great confusion and inner conflict about our proper roles, and a dearth of communal support that often makes us, men and women, feel terribly isolated. So we can't and maybe shouldn't go back, and I'll say more about that later, but we sure need to do something to help boys become real men. The conscious move from girl to woman is needed too, but while there are some significant similarities between genders, there are also significant differences, so that's kind of another story. But one of the starting places for moving from boy psychology to men psychology, say Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette, is to understand some of the differences more clearly, with the goal of, quote, helping you understand your strengths and weaknesses as a man and provide you with a map to the territories of masculine selfhood which you still need to explore and develop. And to aid this understanding, they identify four main archetypes or universal psychic patterns in the male psyche. Three are the warrior, the energy of disciplined, aggressive action; the magician, the energy of initiation and transformation; and the lover, the energy that connects men to others and to the world. I wish I had time to talk about all of them in some depth, but not surprisingly, the final archetype is also the first archetype, the king, because the king is the ruler of and to some degree includes the other three. So today I'm just going to focus on that. Both in world mythology and in the deep structures of the male psyche, the king has two main functions. The first is that of just and creative ordering. In many mythological traditions, the benevolent king occupies the symbolic center of the world. Physically, different peoples named this center by turns Olympus, Rome, Mount Sinai, the Black Hills, and so forth. But mythologically and archetypally, the center is both none and all of these actual places. And when the king, the human closest to God or the gods, and sometimes thought part God himself, occupies this central place with wisdom and compassion, it is thought that divine order and organization radiates out to all parts of the kingdom, beyond which was thought to be chaos and the realms of demons and monsters. And we see the psychological importance of this historically, both in that the divine right of kings was thought to be come from a sacred source, but also in the fact that the kingship, the archetypal image and energy more than any particular individual, was what was important. We hear this in the cry, "The king is dead. Long live the king." The second kingly function was to make his kingdom fertile and to bless his subjects for their legitimate talents and contributions to the realm. A wise and fair and vital king, in some cultures paired with a queen or goddess figure, brought forth fertility and blessings to the people. So the king was the channel from the divine world to the earthly one, and thus could bestow blessing and honor to his subjects. But in contrast, say the ancient myths, if the king was not wise or compassionate, or can we imagine, neither, it was thought that disastrous social and economic consequences would befall the land. And often these bad kings were really hidden boys and thus dominated by the shadow or negative part of the king archetype, which is the tyrant. And by that secret counterpart, the weakling. A healthy and secure king thinks of himself as the servant of a greater cause, of the entire realm. The unhealthy king, or immature king psyche, strives only for power and self-aggrandizement because his psyche is stuck in infantile grandiosity. I'd like you to notice what a contrast this image of the healthy king as a force for just ordering and blessing presents when compared with so many so-called men in positions of leadership today. And I offer this perspective because it hopefully helps pierce the grand illusion of male maturity promoted in suits and ties on cable gossip and propaganda channels masquerading as news. I hope that this might help us see how the ranting, bullying, smoke-spewing image of the great and powerful Oz is, psychologically speaking, really the small, frantic boy man behind the curtain, desperate to hide his self-serving machinations. This is not to overly blame and certainly not to demonize these men. We now know that psychologically a man remains a boy not because he wants to, but because no one has shown him the way to transform his boy energies into man energies. He was not initiated by his male elders into full manhood, into clarity of what it means to live as a productive and honorable man in the community, one who doesn't seek to solve problems primarily by blaming others. But when the gross immaturity of a tyrant and his minions does terrible damage to innocent people, when a king who is neither wise nor compassionate precipitates potentially disastrous social and economic and ecological consequences to the entire kingdom, then we have to call this out for what it is: immature and therefore only quasi-legitimate, because while it may have legal authority, it has no moral authority. And thus it is to be resisted. And beyond resistance, by understanding the differences between mature and immature masculine power, we can then try to hopefully have a better chance of recognizing and supporting the mature forms when they present themselves. We have to see it, and we have to name it before we can fix it. And Morin and Gillette acknowledge that archetypes are archetypes and people are people. So that just like the kings of old, even the healthiest of those in kingly positions of leadership today will often fall far short of fully actualizing the most positive attributes. Yet the archetypal king and queen energies still seek, through them and through us, to bring order and to fertilize and to bless the world. And we have to do our best to bring these out in ourselves and demand that those who lead us demonstrate them also. Here are Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette reflecting on this need, with which I'll close. Ours is a world that needs the masculine energies in their maturity more urgently than ever before in human history. It is a strange irony that at the very moment when all of civilization seems to be nearing its greatest initiation ever, from a fragmented tribal way of life to a more whole universal life, the ritual processes for turning boys into men have all but disappeared from the planet. Just at the time when it is necessary for survival that immaturity be replaced with maturity, we are thrown back upon our own inner resources. Maybe this is as it should be. If ours is an age of individualism in the deepest as well as in the most shallow sense, then let us nurture and welcome individual men and women who will, with the benevolence of ancient kings, the courage and decisiveness of ancient warriors, the wisdom of magicians, and the passion of lovers, move energetically to take up the challenge of saving a world that has been cast down before us. How well we transform ourselves from men living under the power of boy psychology to real men guided by the archetypes of man psychology will have a decisive effect on the outcome of our present world situation. May we all seek to play a part in successfully accomplishing this vital transformation. Amen and blessed be.